All right, let's do this again. Welcome back, everyone, to the 259.59 podcast, a podcast dedicated to competitive amateur runners. I'm your host, Donald Morrison, running and training in Pasadena, California. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the first episode of this brand new podcast. And thank you so much for the feedback. The goal of this new podcast, of course, like our running, is to get better and better, and we're going to do that together. Well, let's get into episode two. Here's the rundown for this episode. Injuries, running with them, trying not to run with them, more like it, dealing with the frustration and how to move on. Then I'm going to get into the staple of half marathon and marathon training, the long run. And then I'm going to end with really kind of a sad personal story. The wife and I dealt with some loss on the home front in the last couple weeks, which is why this podcast wasn't out really a week earlier. I'm going to share that story because a lot of what happened got me thinking about things, and I'm going to tell you how it relates to running. All right, let's lace up our running shoes and go. Injuries. Yeah. You know, just hearing that word, I know you guys are all cringing too. I'm just cringing thinking about them. The older you get, the more they seem to happen. And they're, you don't want to talk about it too much because you're afraid you'll jinx yourself. And the next run, I'll go out and pull a muscle or something like that. So, I know we always refrain. I mean, we talk about injuries, but then we kind of don't want to talk about them because then we're like, oh, wait a minute. It's been a long time since I'm hurt. I might be due. Well, it seems like the older you get, the more often they seem to happen. I know when I was in my early 30s, I didn't really have much. And then I started to get nagging injuries here and there, groin strains, strains here and there, hamstring, calf. I mean, you name it, cramps that would set me back a few days. I even had what I thought may have been a fracture. It turned out just to be an edema, which, you know, it was still painful in my shin area. But fortunately, there was no fracture. But boy, did that have me worried. All kinds of things. And every time you're hurt, especially when you're training for a half marathon, marathon, it sets you back because you got to take a week off, 2 weeks off, a month off, and you're really not able to run like you normally would. And it just frustrates the heck out of you. In fact, about 6 weeks ago or so now, really almost 2 months, in the last podcast, I'd mentioned I went to Las Vegas in mid-December. And when I went, the first thing I did was run the scenic loop of Red Rock Canyon, which is about 20 miles west of Las Vegas. If you guys have never been, or if you've been to Las Vegas, next time you go, if you are planning to go, take a car if you happen to drive yourself, or if you're going to rent a car, maybe just rent a car, drive up there. It's a great place, lots of good hiking. Well, what I did for the second time, I ran the scenic loop. And this time I ran it clockwise, the first time I ran counterclockwise. So I ran a little over 14 miles. Well, the next day or two, I noticed that my right butt muscle area started to hurt. Well, muscles, there's multiple muscles in there, obviously. And my upper hamstring area kind of started to bother me. And I thought, well, I guess that makes sense. I mean, it was such a long climb. I mean, you're climbing 1,400 feet, and then you're going down. So, I mean, your legs are, you know, you got your quads and your hamstrings and your gluteus maximus muscle, they're all working. And what happened was, as it went on and on, the pain wouldn't go away. I kind of just brushed it off, as we tend to do when we're running. It's not that bad, it's not that bad, it's not that bad. And then I kept running a week later, 2 weeks later. And then I ended up, what happened was, I think it was my piriformis muscle was inflamed. And when it's inflamed, it then suddenly hits the sciatic nerve, and then I feel like I'm cramping. So I'll run, and then suddenly I'll feel like I have this like really nasty cramp or pull in my hamstring area. But it's really not that. It's really just, well, I think it's my sciatic nerve just kind of acting up, mimicking what would be a pull or a cramp. And I have to stop because it just simply gets too painful. Well, what I do is I do these stretches for my piriformis muscle. Turns out, and I've had this problem a few times, because what happened was, a few years ago I was training for the Tokyo Marathon, and it was my right piriformis area, then it was my left, and it was mostly my left, because that happened about two times. I went to a chiropractor who happens to be a runner here in Pasadena. He's since retired. His name's Steve Smith. He started the Pasadena Pacers here. Just a really great guy, really knowledgeable about running, and I specifically went to him because he's a runner, and I figured, well, this chiropractor here knows about running. He gets it. And he really did get it. Well, it turned out he found that my arches were collapsing. So he had me put on these little mini heel wedges, because he said when your arches were collapsing, when you would land, you were landing in such a way on your foot that you were putting way too much strain on your piriformis muscle. And your piriformis muscle in your butt was acting up, and then it was probably hitting your sciatic nerve, or you were just straining it and it was sore. The piriformis muscle, if you guys don't know, is this little like band in the middle of your butt. And you can stretch it out if you lay on your back and you kind of grab your, you kind of bend your knee and you grab your ankle and pull it kind of towards your opposite shoulder. So if it's your right, you'll grab your right ankle and you'll bend your knee and kind of pull that. You'll kind of lean a little bit to your left and pull that to your shoulder, and you'll feel in the middle of your butt, you'll feel it being stretched. That's the piriformis muscle, and that's the one that's next to your sciatic nerve. Well, once I put these heel wedges on, I really haven't had any problems with that until mid-December, but then it was on the right side, not my left side. Anyway, the point is, I had to stop, and I had to take a couple, I had to take like a week off and just kind of rest it and stretch it, and that's what I did. And fortunately, since about early January, I was able to build back up my mileage and haven't had any issues. But how frustrating are injuries? And I think you know, talking about, I mean, we can get into rehab and this is what you do and how to do it, but I want to talk about the mental side of injuries, because when you're out, it's really frustrating. I mean, I had, you know, calf strains that have kept me out a couple weeks, two different times, both in my right calf, I've had that. And the last time that happened was, I think, in June of last year. I strained my calf muscle. I was on a run. I was going to do 8 miles. 4 miles in, I feel this cramping sensation in my calf. But I'm like, no, I'm going to keep going, because we're runners and we get stubborn and we don't want to admit when we're getting hurt again. So I finished the 8 miles, the last four, you know, with my calf in a little pain. And then after that, I tried to run the next day, and no. my calf said, nope, not doing that again. And I was out a few weeks, because I think I gave myself a week off, and then I tried to run again, as we do. Oh, I feel fine. I'm going to go out and run again. Nope. So I had to take another couple weeks off. It's really difficult when you have to take time off of running, because then it starts going through your head, oh, no, now I got to start all the way back up. I'm getting out of shape. This is going to be awful. I'm never going to hit my goal for my race coming up. Oh, God. And you kind of get into this, you know, a lot of this negativity starts going through your head. I think one of the best ways to combat that is to really do, you can do some research on how much fitness you really lose when you're hurt. And depending on how long you're out, if you're only out for a week, it's really not that much. I think you don't lose a whole lot of fitness being out like 5 or 7 days. I think after 2 weeks is when you really start to notice it the most. So take comfort in that. But also, as they say, think about how you can remain active, because then if some of you are conscious about your weight, oh, I'm not running, I'm going to gain a bunch of weight, it's going to suck. I know I have that worry. That's why I bring it up, and that's exactly what goes through my head. Figure out how you can do some cross training. Can you get on a bicycle if you have a bicycle? Or can you go to a gym and ride an exercise bike if you have that option for you? By the way, if you just heard a meow, that's one of our five now, because we're fostering indoor cats. So I don't know if you guys caught that, but that's our life. So anyway, anyway, exercise bike, do some cycling if you can, if that's an option for you, because you're not having that pounding of the pavement, which could exacerbate an injury. Also, another thing to do is to aqua jog. And that's what I would do sometimes if I was out for an extended period. I'm lucky where I live next to the Rose Bowl Aquatic Center. If you have a pool next to you, whether it may be your gym, maybe you have access to a gym, if you can afford a membership, you know, just get like a membership for a month, depending on how long you're out, and see if a gym has a pool and has a deep end, obviously. So you want to aqua jog. And some of you guys, I'm sure, are familiar with aqua jogging, but for those of you who aren't, you want to do it in a deep end. You're actually not running in a shallow pool. In fact, you don't want your feet to hit the surface of the pool. What you want is to put on a flotation belt, which a pool should have, but if they don't, you can order one online. They're really not that expensive. You put on a flotation belt, you get into a deep end of a pool, and you just run from one end to the other. You run, I mean, you're kind of, you're in the pool, you have the flotation belt on, so you're upright, and you just you mimic running in the pool. And it's great because there's no pounding, and there's no real, I mean, you have the water resistance, but you're not going to exacerbate any sort of a muscle strain if you do it that way. But of course, talk to your doctor or any healthcare professional before you do that, just to make sure that that's okay, because the doc might say, no, actually, you can't do that. That'll make your specific injury worse. So don't just assume it's okay, obviously. Another thing you can do is walk, if you're able to walk without any pain. Interestingly enough, I think it was early last year, I was doing a speed workout, one of my favorite ones. And what happened was I ended up feeling something in my hip. I was doing a 300, and I think I lunged a little awkward at the start, and I felt a little twinge in my left hip, or my hip area where the hip flexor is, and I said, ah. And so I had to stop, and I tried to run, but it was a little painful. Well, a couple days later, I realized, well, when I walk, there's zero pain. This is very interesting. I'm walking just fine. I can't feel anything. And so I was like, well, I'm going to walk because I'm not going to not do anything. I don't want to do that. If I can walk, I'm walking. The pool aqua jogging wasn't really an option because it's still COVID and they have these COVID restrictions. And I think they weren't even offering flotation belt. I just didn't want to deal with all that. So at the time, I just was like, you know, I'm going to walk. And walking's really boring, but it's not boring if you make a game of it. How fast can I walk a mile? And I said, okay, I can walk fast. I'm not feeling any pain here. And so I did that every day. I was like, well, how fast can I walk a mile? I know how fast I can run a mile. I don't know how fast I can walk a mile. That's interesting. And so I would. I would time myself, and it'd be 13 minutes, 12 minutes, 11 minutes, and I would try to really get faster and faster. Well, about a week later, I tried to run again, and you know, felt a little better, but I gradually got back into it, where 2 weeks later or so, I was kind of pretty much getting back to normal. Increasing my mileage slowly. But that's one thing to do if you're injured. That's kind of, if you're able to walk, kind of make a game of it, because it's really frustrating to not be running. So if you're able to do that, I think that's great. Same with aqua jogging. See how fast you can go from one side of the pool to the other. Obviously, it's going to be slower than running. And cycling as well. How fast can you cycle a mile? How fast can you do a 10K or 15? You know, whatever you're able to do. Try to make a game of it in your own head, and I think that will make it that'll make the time go by a little better for you. There's my cat again. Not sure if you heard that, but anyway, so it'll make the whole not running part go a lot better for you. Make a game of it. I mean, I don't know, how fast can you aqua jog? How fast can you walk a mile? That, I think, helps you mentally deal with the struggle of an injury. Now, if it's serious enough where you can't run at all, I mean, if it's like a fracture, things like that, stress fracture or whatnot, and the doc says, no, you really can't do anything, or if it's even worse than that, like a broken bone, you know, heaven forbid, you know, you just have to be patient. I mean, I know, and that's easier said than done. I totally understand that, but I mean, there's really not much you can do. I mean, you just have to, you know, accept it and understand that you're going to come back strong. And when you do come back strong from a major, major injury, just start slowly, understand that it's a process, and kind of hit a reset button in your brain as much as you can and say, okay, maybe I'm not where I was several months ago, but I can build back. So let's see where I can start, and then let's see how much I can improve. And it's okay if I can't get to where I was. That's okay, because this is where I'm at right now. So you really got to kind of have to live in the moment. But I'll tell you, injuries are frustrating. They really mess with your head. You start to panic a little bit. I'm never going to get back. I'm not going to be in shape for this big marathon. I've been working so hard. This is my dream race. I've always wanted to run Boston. I can't believe it. I'm going to Berlin. This is amazing. But you have to just say, okay, what else can I do? And it's great because aqua jogging, cycling, walking, anything else you're able to do, the elliptical, I mean, whatever, you're going to burn calories. You're going to maintain, and that's the thing that also, that's another important thing. You don't want to gain weight just sitting around doing nothing. So at least that will help you in that aspect. But yeah, I mean, the mental part is really, it's tough. We're all competitors. I mean, we are people who want to run under 3 hours for a marathon, or under 1:30 for a half. Or some of us want to go under 3:30 for a marathon. Whatever it is, whatever your goal is, you know, you're a competitor, and you don't like to take time off. I mean, you like to take time off, but on your terms. But the body doesn't work that way sometimes, especially when you're older. And I'm now in a routine, a stretching routine that I do every single day when I run. Oftentimes, I don't want to do it. I just want to get out the door and get my run over with. Why do I need to stretch? My legs aren't sore at all. I feel fine. But then I realize I'm 43. I need to do that. So I may feel fine, but halfway through the run, I might not. And I just have to accept that. So find a stretching routine. What I like to do is a mix of dynamic and static stretching. So I'll do the traditional, you know, lean up against a wall, press against the wall, stretch my calves, and then I'll do other, you know, I'll do dynamic stretches, things like that. Groin stretches, static stretch too. One of the things I do, you know, stretch my quads, my hamstrings. But I want to do all that to feel loose. I know there's debate. Should you stretch before you run? Should you not? Well, I personally do it. And I, like I said, a mix of dynamic and static stretching. That's what I do. It works for me. I think it's probably contributed to a reduced number of injuries I've had over the last, you know, probably 7-8 months or so. Like I said, the only thing I really had was that piriformis. And I kind of blame that on just running a very difficult 14 miles in Red Rock where I'm climbing 1,400 feet, which is a lot. So, but aside from that, I would really recommend a consistent stretching routine the older you get, because we're just not young anymore. And that's another thing too, is it's the transitioning from being younger and older, because we're so competitive and we always want to better ourselves. We have to accept our bodies are getting older. We can still do what we're doing. We can still train hard. We can still run really good times, but we have to pay more attention to our bodies and we have to take care of ourselves. So hopefully that will help. Look, we all go through it. It's really, really frustrating. We all get down on ourselves and we start to think it's the world's ending. Every time you're out with an injury, I'm never going to get better. The world's ending. This sucks. I'm never going to be what I once was. But every single time, it always does get better and you're always, always going to get back as long as you want to get there. So that's what I try to do. Hopefully that will help. If it doesn't, sorry. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Hey, look, we've all been there, and some of us are going through it right now. Hopefully you guys who are injured can heal and get better soon and get on with your goals. Okay, well, let's move on to, as I said, a staple of marathon and half marathon training, the long run. Yep, the long run. We tend to do it mostly on weekends. You know, I actually used to do my long runs on Mondays. I worked for a long time. I worked overnights, midnight to 8 a.m. So I'd get home at, you know, 8:30, 8:45, whatever it was. And then I would do long runs on Mondays because I would do track workouts, speed workouts on Saturdays. And I wanted to break up. I didn't want to run speed workout and long run back-to-back days. I actually do that now, and it's been okay. So I think it's okay if you want, but I would try to split them if you can. I just don't, because I don't want to do long runs during the week anymore, and I don't really have time always to go to the track during the week. So I just do speed workouts Saturday, long runs on Sunday. But long runs, boy, they can be tough, huh? Especially when it's hot out. We're in the winter right now, so it's a lot cooler. But long runs can be grueling and they can be brutal. But when you're finished, you kind of feel good, even if you're a little beat up. And you know what I'm talking about. So here's the thing with long runs, especially when it comes to specifically marathon training. Not so much half marathons, I think your long runs, when you do them, if you're looking for a half, I would definitely do a long runs over 13 miles. I definitely would recommend that, mostly for psychological reasons, because I think if you can show yourself, hey, I can run longer than 13 miles, you're going to go into that race knowing that you can finish. And I think that's really important. So I would do, you know, if you're not a marathon runner, if you don't have any marathons coming up, if you just are focusing on halves, I don't think you, if you want, you can go as long as 20, but I think if you're wondering, well, how long, I mean, what's the longest I should probably go, but I don't want to go 20, I'd say 16, 17 maybe would be pretty good. You know, get your body used to running past 13 just for the physiological, but also the psychological reasons as well. So for marathons, here's one of the things that people ask a lot. How long should the long runs be for marathon training? I know the elites sometimes will go 24, 25, 26. Sometimes I think they even go up to 28 miles. I think I've read before that some elites were doing 28 miles. For us competitive amateurs, unless you're a real, real endurance guy and you do ultra marathons, I don't think that you really need to go that far. In fact, I think the longest you really need to do would be about 21, 22 maybe. But here's the big question. There are some training plans out there that say you don't need to go 20 miles. Well, are those training plans right? Well, I guess it depends. What's my opinion on it? Should people, when they're training for a marathon, and it's the big question all the time, should we run 20-mile long runs? And I think the answer is, for personally, even though I think there are some training plans that say you don't need to, it's not I believe them. You probably don't need to. But do I think you should do a long run at least up to 20 miles at least once in your marathon training cycle? The answer to me is yes. Yes, you should, for psychological reasons mostly. A marathon is obviously, why am I saying this? You guys know, 26.2 miles. And 20 is really like a big barrier. If you can get to the 20, if you can run 20 miles, you kind of know that you've made it. Even though you know, okay, this is training, I still have, and once the race pops up, I still have another 10K to go. But in training, once you get to 20, I think you really feel really, really good about yourself. I think the psychological benefits as well, I mean, obviously the physiological benefits, of course, but the psychological benefits of running 20 miles, I think is well worth doing. So if you're one of those people out there going, well, my training plan says I only need to go 18 or 17 miles, great. You know, you can stick to that if you want, but I really think you should go at least once 20 miles, just because I think you'll feel good. You'll finish it and you'll say, wow, that was great. If I can do 20, I can get this, these next 6 miles going, because it's hard. It's hard to run a marathon, period. But if you can, if you know going into that race, I can do 20. I know I can do 20. You're going to feel confident. And then once you hit 20, then you know, okay, I got this last 10K. I got it. I can do this. But I know for me, I like to do either 3 or 4 20-mile long runs leading up. So I'll do maybe 4 20-mile long runs in a 5-week span, and then in between I'll maybe run 17 or 18. So I'll kind of break it up. I'll go like 20, 20, 17 or 18, and then 20, 20, something like that. I mean, you can do 20, 20, 20. I think this for Paris in September, early October, I think I ran just 3 20 miles. I think I went 20, 20, 18, and then 20. Or I went 20, 21, 20, 18, and 20, something like that. I think the longest I went was 21. I felt really good on all those runs. And long runs, you know, you take it easy anyway. I mean, you could mix in a couple of hard miles here and there in the long run if you want. But long runs generally are meant to be easy. So you can kind of just cruise. You don't have to go 20 at marathon pace. In fact, I wouldn't recommend that at all. I think that would be, I think you can do more harm to your body than good, for sure. So take it easy. How easy should you go? I mean, I know they say what, marathon pace plus what, a minute 30 or something like that, or a minute 45 out, or 2 minutes, something. I mean, I usually do my long run pace about seven, anywhere from, depending how good I feel, sometimes it's as fast as 7:30 mile pace. Sometimes it's as slow as 7:55. I try to be under 8 just because I like to be under 8. It just, I just feel better for me mentally if I can go under 8. But I think it's okay to go slower than that. I think you can go, if you're someone who's a 250 marathoner, 255, or you're looking to go under 3, I think you can do your long run in like 8:15, 8:30 pace if you want. And that's really, and that depends on the terrain. Obviously, if you're running up a hill, your pace is going to be slower. I think that goes without saying. So I would say if you're trying to go under 3 hours, I really wouldn't run slower than 8:30 pace. I think that should be the slowest. I think the fastest you should run, if you don't want to mix in any hard miles here and there, I would say I wouldn't go faster than 7:30. You don't want to burn your legs out either, too. So you don't want to try to go under 7. You know, run 6:50, kind of mimic a marathon, because you're gonna burn yourself out, and you don't want to do that. But yeah, I mean, 20 miles psychologically is gonna do you wonders. There's just that 20 mile mark. It's just it can be such a barrier for people. And I think if you can cross that barrier, you got it. You got that marathon. So yeah, I mean, long runs, obviously beneficial. And you know, the physiological, I'm not a scientist, but the physiological, I think if you run out over an hour and a half, they say your mitochondria in your cells grows, which means you have more energy. I've heard that, but yeah, you need the endurance. But so I think 20 miles is great for you. So do it. Go out and do it. Take it easy and get yourself prepped. And that's the thing about long runs. How do you get yourself psyched up to do a long run? Well, just look at how great it's going to feel psychologically when you're done. You're going to feel it 20 miles. When you're done with 20 miles, you feel it physically. You know you ran 20 miles. Even if you're taking it easy, you're going to be a little worn out. But man, you feel really, really good mentally, especially if you had a pretty good 20 miles. But also remember, don't look at it like, oh my gosh, 20 miles, that's tough. Look at it like, hey, I'm taking it easy. I'm not going to run hard. So it's okay. I mean, this isn't 20 miles as fast as I can go. We're not doing a tempo run here. We're not doing a speed workout. We're going to take it nice and easy, and we're just going to go. We're just going to enjoy it. We're just going to go be in our own heads, be in our own little world right now, and we're going to do it. And I think that's the best way to approach a long run like that. Just think to yourself, it's going to be easy. I'm just going to take it easy. I know I'm in good shape, and there you go. So hopefully that helps. And what kind of long runs do you guys do? How long do you guys go? Do you guys really go 26.2? Do you go longer? Do you go right up there? Do you go 24, 25? Let me know. Okay, so I'm going to start this segment. It's going to be kind of a sad story. Well, not kind of. It is a sad story for us. You know, I was going to end this episode talking about the Boston Marathon and the elites, both on the men's and women's side, because it's an amazing field. But we're going to get into that in the next episode. So the reason why this podcast wasn't done a week ago is my wife and I had had some rough times on the home front lately. Just to give you a quick background, and I mentioned you heard our cat. It's one of four or five in our house that we foster. Well, we had really just a few weeks ago, we had five outdoor cats that we take care of. They're not our own cats that we shoved outdoors. We wouldn't do that. So if you guys like animals, we don't shove cats outdoors and force them to live outside. These are feral cats that basically came to us, and we feed them, and we gave them a cat house. Actually, our neighbor built a cat house for them. So they've been coming by for several years now. My wife is very active in the rescue world. We've fostered many, many cats. We fostered dogs as well. And my wife, we had kind of a feral cat problem in our own neighborhood here in Pasadena. And my wife kind of took it upon herself to get a lot of these cats around our area adopted, and she found them homes, and she also worked with people and does TNR, which is trap and release. So what you'll do is you'll trap a feral, you'll take them, get them spayed or neutered, and then you'll release them where you found them, and that way they're not repopulating. Because the problem is you get too many cats and they repopulate, and a lot of them are sickly, and it's just it gets really messy. Well, anyway, so we have the outdoor ferals that kind of come to us, and they really warmed up, and we had this nice little community. And every time I'd come home from work, I would see some of the cats hanging out on our porch, and it just makes you feel good. You know, they're cute, they're fun, and when they open up to you, it just makes everything worth it. Well, a couple weeks ago, when I was driving to work in the morning, one of our younger cats, a sweet cat we named Babyface, just because she was super cute, and she was young, probably no older than 2 or 2.5, maybe at the oldest. I don't want to be too graphic, but I found her remains. She was, we have coyotes in the area, and they got her, and it was really sad, and I had to break the news to my wife, and it was really upsetting. Well, 3 days later, we had to put down one of our other outdoor cats, this sweet little ragtag guy named Al. He had health issues, and we ended up having to trap him to get him neutered, which we did, but then he had to stay in the hospital. This was last spring, about May or so. And he stayed in the hospital for about 6 to 8 weeks. He had issues with his teeth, nerves exposed. They had to pull his teeth. He had a nasty ear infection. And then they found out he had kidney problems. Well, it was just too much to overcome. And he was deteriorating quickly. And we had to make that call 4 days later after losing Babyface. We had to put him down. And it was hard. It was hard. He was such a great little guy. I should probably post pictures on my blog. You guys would really like this guy. He was great, but nature had other plans. And then about a week later, one of the outdoor ferals, she was the most feral. We named her Sam. She would never let us touch her. She would eat our food, and she came by. She knew this was home, but she just would never let us touch her. We were able to trap her, though, and get her fixed after she had kittens that my wife found homes for. And so she was sick, apparently, and we found her a few days ago just dead. And it was a real, really big blow to us to lose three in less than 2 weeks. We didn't know Sam was sick. We knew Al, our time was short with him. And then Babyface, that was just a blow. I mean, that was devastating. And the cat house we have out front is coyote proof. The entrances aren't big enough for them. We even have a sensor on our driveway that my wife puts out every night. So if someone walks up, there's a chime that goes off. So if we're awake, we can come out and look, and which has happened before. We've seen coyotes and we've chased them off. But it also gives the cats time to look, because I think they've been trained to hear that, and then they look up, and that gives them a little bit of time to run away. So, but other than short of that, we unfortunately, because they're outdoor ferals, we can't force them. We can't stop them from wandering around. But really, and you're kind of wondering, well, how does this? This is really sad. But how does this relate to running? And because it is really, this whole thing got me thinking about what a great little positivity bubble that we had, my wife and I and our cats. And I, like I said, I'd come home and if I had a bad day at work or was stressful, was busy, I would go home and I'd see these cats, and I'd see our indoor cats too, one of which you probably heard in the background. And they just make me feel better. I come home and I don't think about the stress. I don't think about what happened at work. I'm focused. I got to feed the cats, and I look at them. They're funny. They're cute. I'm going to pet them. And then my wife comes home. She does the same thing. And it's great. And it's this little supportive positivity bubble that we formed. Well, that bubble's been shattered. And we're trying to repair that as best we can. But, you know, all that negative energy out there in the world, and it's been building and building and building for the last several years. I don't want to get too into what I think's going on. This is not that podcast. But it's been building and building, and that negativity wave finally got to us. And I started thinking about that and how, man, it feels so good to be home. It just feels so great, and I just don't really think and worry about much. And I started to think about what other areas have this kind of positivity. Running does. I mean, how positive is the running community? I mean, and you guys know, because maybe you guys have a lot of friends that run. Maybe you have running groups that you're a part of. I mean, how great are those groups? I mean, how positive is that energy? I mean, you can just kind of feel it. It's hard to explain either in words or talking about, but you know what I mean. How great is the energy when you go to a marathon, a big marathon, the Boston Marathon, London, Paris, wherever? The energy is just amazing. You have the crowds cheering for you. Everybody wants you to finish. Everybody wants you to do well. Runners are pushing other runners. This isn't about winning and losing. It's not like a football game or basketball game where there's a winner and a loser. Everybody's basically a winner out there. And you feed off of that, and you just feel so good. And it's not just the big races, the local 5Ks, the community 5Ks, the charity 5Ks down the street. They're smaller. The crowds aren't as big. But gosh, you still have that same positivity. Everybody's supportive of each other. Everybody's there to socialize, greet each other, have a good time, cheer each other on to finish, whether you're trying to run a PR or you're just walking and trying to cross the finish line. It's just a great, great overall feeling. And I think that's what running does. And like I said, so much negativity out there. If you're feeling down or if you're feeling stressed out, things have gotten to you, keep on running, guys. Just keep going. Keep doing it out there. You know, I was out earlier this morning. I did a 2x5K workout at the Rose Bowl Loop. Saturday mornings are great if you guys live, maybe some of you, a couple of you out there live in Southern California or near Pasadena. Go out to the Rose Bowl Saturday mornings. Just a great, great vibe. There's so many people out there walking, cycling, running, a lot of people specifically on Saturdays. And it's just a good energy, just people out there feeling good, wanting to get that exercise in, wanting to just improve themselves in some way. And because everyone's out there for such a positive reason, you get that energy. You get that positive energy out there, and you just feel good. I mean, after the run, and I had my first 5K this morning. It was tough. I was like, wow, I didn't think I'd be this worn out. But man, I still felt good, and my second 5K was only 6 seconds slower, which I thought was impressive because I felt like it was a lot slower. But I think it was that energy that kept me, that pushed me, that kind of kept me at a pretty good pace, a lot of pace I thought was was much slower than what it turned out to be. So my point is, guys, what we're doing out there, pushing each other, trying to achieve our goals. Some of you guys are on the sub-3-hour marathon Facebook group looking for advice and getting it. I mean, what a positive community that is out there. If you find any message boards out there or apps or any kind of place or running groups that can you help push each other. Hey, this is my goal. Hey, you can achieve this goal, guys. We believe in you. How good does that feel? That's what the running community is. It's so positive out there. With so many nasty, negative things out in this world, especially now, running bucks that. Running is its own positivity bubble. And guys, immerse yourself in that positivity. It just feels so good. Even when it's grueling, even when it's hot and you're on mile 18 of that 20-mile long run and you're like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Any minute, I'm going to drop dead because this is really hard. You won't. You'll finish and you'll say, you know, that was grueling. It was rough. I had a terrible run. One of my worst runs ever, but I did it. And boom, that's the positive energy. That's the positive energy I'm talking about. Guys, we're doing it right. Stick with running. It's good. It's not just good for you physically. It's good for you mentally. You know what I mean. All right. That's it, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to episode 2. Next episode, episode 3 coming. We're going to get into that Boston Marathon men's and women's elite preview. What a fantastic field on both sides. Oh, man. I'll be at the race, hopefully. Knock on wood, injury free. I will be there, so I won't really get to see them until I watch the replay. But boy, it's going to be something else. We're also going to get into the value of tempo runs. And then I'm going to pose a question to you guys about strollers and showboating. I'm going to tell you a story that about a race that I was in, oh gosh, probably about 11 years ago now. Guys, follow me on Twitter, Bruin Donald Runs. You can follow me on Facebook. Just do a search, Donald Morrison, Pasadena. You'll see me, my pictures of me running. So you'll know it's me. Also, hey, any feedback, always welcome. Email Donald Morrison, DonaldMorrison, 807 at gmail.com. Thanks so much, guys. Good luck on your running. Achieve your goals.